Good afternoon, everybody. Another beautiful afternoon here in sunny but cool Coronado, California. Welcome again to the Real Tommy Unleashed show. Today we have a great guest, Steve Schneider, best-selling author. Many of my followers already know him and probably have read his book. Many of you out there might not have, and you're going to want to pick it up. It's fantastic. But before we get started here, I want to thank our sponsors who help make my show possible and all the other shows here at the Attorney King Studios in Coronado. Of course, say a big thank you to Attorney King, one of our sponsors, Sakon Cosino, Nikki Rottens, IB Fitness, and Wisely Asset Management. And thank you all so much for supporting us here. And Steve is here today, and he's going to talk about his amazing book, Shot Down, which also a documentary was made out of it. I've seen both. I've read both. Well, I read one. I saw one. And Steve, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll dive into your book.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet, Steve.
I was born in Pasadena, California, raised in that area. Then I went to college at UCLA. My mother attended UCLA. She graduated in 41. She was a classmate of the legendary Jackie Robinson.
Oh,
when I was at UCLA, I was a classmate of Lew Alcindor, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wow.
And then after I graduated from UCLA, I had a 40-year career in sales and sales management. The last 36 was with a company called Vision Service Plan, VSP, which provides vision care as an employee benefit that corporations offer their employees to cover eye exams, glasses, and contact lenses. And I retired from there in 2009. I live in Seal Beach, California. That's my main residence since 1972. I have a second home in Sedona, Arizona, where I'm at right now, actually.
Ooh, you'd love it there.
It's beautiful. Kind of the best of both worlds. You have the beach in Orange County, south of LA, and then the high desert.
Absolutely. So, I'm going to be up there in the near future. We're having a little reception to watch the boat parade.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I always love going up there at this time of year.
Yeah. Fall's a great time to be up this way.
Oh, no kidding.
So we have three grown sons, and now since writing my book, I basically have a full or part-time job, you could call it. Since I've written the book, it's changed my life because I go all around the United States, attending air shows, signing copies of the book, and also do a lot of speaking and make presentations to all sorts of organizations. So it's kind of become my passion and my hobby.
Oh, well, you do it well, and I've met you at several air shows, out of the state even, in Wisconsin, of all places.
Yeah.
But that doesn't surprise me that you get around like that. That's awesome. And what inspired you to take on this journey about your dad, which is a fantastic story? And I think it's really important to tell.
Well, thank you. Well, as I mentioned, I retired in 2009, and that's when I had the time to really delve into my dad's history, war history, in more detail. Growing up, I knew the basics. I knew he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. Flew bombing missions over Europe, and in February of 1944, his plane was shot down. And he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture and eventually made it back to England. And my parents had kept a lot of material from the war years, and I just wanted to go through that and organize it and find out some more details. And there were two items that were really significant. One was a diary that my dad wrote while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down. That's absolutely riveting. It's in the book. And the other were all the letters that my dad had written to my mother while he was stationed in England. And he was really candid in those letters. He talked about what bombing missions were like, what life was like on the air base, what life was like in England and London at the time, escapades of him and his crew. And I just became fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew. And it became my passion. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. I went on a quest to find relatives of all my dad's crew, to ask them what information they could give to me. I went on the internet, spent countless hours downloading declassified military documents and doing research. Joined a number of World War II organizations, went to their reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, 3 years into my research, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so compelling and so unique that it needed to be told. So I decided to write a book.
Oh, that's great that you did that. Telling a story like that, a true story, and being closely affiliated with the main protagonist is quite a challenge. Your accuracy, your research, everything has to be spot on. And there's still enough people around from that era that'll find it interesting and be wanting to follow it. And for all you know, maybe they had some kind of interaction with your dad's aircraft or some of the crew. Stranger things have happened in this business.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I've had people read the book and they'll find their veteran, you know, another guy that flew with the 306 bomb group, or actually another bomb group. I've had relatives of members of the crew that hardly knew anything about their veteran, whether it was you know, an uncle or a cousin, and they came across the book, and all of a sudden they find out that their relatives, their veterans in the book, and find out more. So it's really, really exciting when that happens.
Oh, it is. And we come from an era where our parents, who were World War II combat vets, they didn't talk about it. And for me, it was like trying to pull teeth from my dad to find out some of the things that had gone on. It gotten easier after I had been in the service because he was a little more comfortable. But I swear it was in the last year of his life that he really started telling me things that happened. And I collected notes, and I've thought about doing that myself. I still have a lot of blank spaces. Yeah. It's a challenge, and I admire anybody that can do that and bring those stories to life, because they're so important stories. I mean, the whole experience of being shot down, going through the underground, and escaping. There's another author, I just read her work out of New Hampshire, about her dad. Was a very similar experience. And it was called Finding Dad. And he was shot down over Belgium. And the resistance helped him get through Belgium, through France. It took him almost 8 months to get back to the UK, which is unbelievable. Just unbelievable what your dad had to go through.
Yeah, I am so blessed and so fortunate to know so much about the details of not only what happened to my dad, but each member of his crew. The book, the kind of first half of the book builds up to the day the plane was shot down, and then the second half of the book is all about what happened afterwards. And as I said, it's just not about my dad. And it's all based on firsthand testimony by the people who were involved in the events that took place. Either my dad, other members of the crew who survived. I probably wouldn't have been able to have written the book if it wasn't for two Belgium gentlemen, Dr. Paul Delahaye and Jacques Lalot, who were young boys during the war. And they were greatly affected by it. They saw firsthand the atrocities committed against their Nazis and by the Nazis against their friends and family. And later in life, they became local historians. And they interviewed all these Belgian people and members of the Belgium underground about events that took place involving my dad and his crew, and they documented their testimony. And they gave me unbelievably detailed information that would have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a huge debt.
You know, that's something which is really amazing, because I have friends who live in Belgium and around Bastogne, and they are sometimes, I think, more American patriots than some of the people we have in this country. And how they've adopted, the gentleman that I had met had adopted the crew of a B-26. They were all killed in the crash, but they adopted them, and they still maintain their cemetery headstones and everything near their home. And they actually established a museum dedicated to that plane and to the crew. And I feel very blessed that I was able to meet these people and become friends with them, and their knowledge is just unbelievable. And I can see how that must have really been an experience for you.
Yeah, I've been to Belgium 6 times. Wow. And the Belgian people are really the people in the Netherlands as well, and mm-hmm. France. They are still, to this day, so grateful and so thankful for the Allies and the Americans, you know, coming to liberate them from 4 years of Nazi oppression and Nazi occupation. I mean, they know what it's like to lose all of their freedoms.
Right.
You know, the U.S. has never been invaded, but they treasure their freedoms, and they treat you like royalty when you go over there. They've erected a number of memorials in the area. There's one to my dad and his crew in the little village of Mackinac, Belgium, near where the plane came down.
Mm, yeah.
They have celebrations and ceremonies to commemorate these events, and they're just wonderful ceremonies and to go to. It's just fantastic. I have some deep, lifelong friends over there.
Oh, definitely. They're awesome people. I you know, the same thing, friends, and they have become World War II reenactors.
Oh, yep.
In addition, and they are very meticulous, and it's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure that they're carrying on something that went on there that impacted their entire existence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Two of my dad's crew, well, five of the crew made it, of the 10-man crew made it home. Five did not. And two of the men who did not make it back, one Louis Colbert is buried in the Ardennes American Cemetery in Belgium. And one of my dad's waist gunners, John Pindrock, is buried in the Netherlands American Cemetery in Margraten. And like you say, you know, the local people have adopted those graves, and on certain momentous events during the year, like Memorial Day or other occasions, they'll lay flowers at the gravesite, and they really take that seriously.
Oh, and it's not, they pass it on to their kids. Their kids are involved in it also, which is just amazing. And it really makes you feel, to me, proud to be an American, proud to be of what our parents did during the war. And, you know, and it also kind of reinforces my my gratitude that I was able to serve.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, it's awesome. Did your dad talk to you much about his experiences, or did you find out most of it after the fact when going through the materials?
Well, like you mentioned, you know, my dad, like most World War II veterans, didn't talk very much about the war until 1989. Mm-hmm. And that's when the memorial to my dad and his crew was erected. And my dad and the three other members of the crew that were still living at the time went over for the dedication ceremonies. And there he was reunited with all these Belgian people that hit him during the war, revisited these places where he was hidden. And that brought it all back. And he started talking about it after that.
Oh.
And then 5 years later, which was my first trip to Belgium in 1994, I went over with my parents, my wife and I. And there, you know, that's when it became personal for me, because I got to see all those places firsthand. And then my dad started talking about it, and I learned a lot more. You know, when you're there and seeing these places, and it's amazing how many places and locations where the events took place are still there today. So you can go, you know, visit where history took place.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I just find that so fantastic. And I think that part of the documentary that was made, your trip over there with your wife.
Part of it, I've on two trips to Belgium. We did some filming. So my youngest son, who was a film major at Pepperdine Clayton, and also some directors, movie people came over, and we've recorded or filmed hundreds of hours.
Sure.
Not hundreds, but hours and hours of film. We just used just a smidgen of it in the documentary.
I know how that goes.
But part of that footage was the interview that I did with Hans Berger.
Okay.
The pilot that shot my dad's plane down. So
that's right. That was must have been an amazing experience.
Oh, unbelievable. You know, all my dad knew and all the Air Force knew was that his plane was attacked by two German Focke-Wulf fighters and shot down. And that's all I thought I'd ever know. Because I thought it'd be impossible to find the pilot. He probably died during the war, or it's 70 years later, he's passed away. I can't speak German. But one day my wife, Glenda, said, why don't you try to find the German pilot? that shot down your dad's plane. I'm thinking she's naive. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And it's ridiculous. But like a good husband, I did what she told me to do. And I found Hans Berger. And fortunately for me, became a translator after the war. So he speaks perfect English.
Oh, my gosh.
And he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force. And I actually learned that the gunners on my dad's plane shot Hans down at the same time that he shot my dad's plane down. So they shot each other down.
That's something. We were over in, I want to say, it was in the 80s, probably mid-80s, our A-10 wing had gone over to Germany for a NATO exercise. And we got to meet one of the head generals of the German Luftwaffe, who was a ME-109 pilot in World War II and then went on to become an ME-262 pilot. But he told us about how they would swarm and attack a B-17. And it was really interesting to actually listen to that. And there was another, it was an American soldier who was there. He was a staff sergeant with a German accent. And he was there. He had originally was captured, became a POW here, liked America, stayed and joined the American Army. And now they were using him as like an interpreter over there. It's funny how life takes people.
Yeah, actually, that was somewhat similar to Hans, because after the war, he worked for the U.S. Military Occupational Force there in Germany in the denazification of the Hitler Youth.
Mm, wow.
And then after that, he started his own language translation school. And it's interesting, Hans is 98 years old now. He lives in Munich, Germany. I've been over there a couple times to meet him. And interestingly enough, of all the people that are involved in the shutdown story, Hans is the only one still living.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you also tell his story.
Yeah, I tell part of it. Hans was fortunate toward the end of the war, early 1945, they pulled him out of combat to become a test pilot for the Henkel HE-162 single fighter that the Nazis were trying to perfect, which they never did. But that basically saved his life, because if he had kept, being a wolf pilot and going up in the against the all the formations and the raids, he probably would have been shot down and killed. As it was, he was shot down 3 times, but he made it through the war. He himself, he shot down 7 B-17s and 1 Spitfire.
Wow. Unbelievable. Boy, those stories. My, your dad and mom, I'm sure too, were like my parents were children of the Depression. And my dad grew up with his cousins, and they were basically brothers and sisters because they were raised by my grandmother. And I call him an uncle. I mean, really he's not, but he was a cousin, but he was a B-25 pilot in the 5th Air Force in the South Pacific. But that's all I ever knew. He just didn't talk about it at all. And I wouldn't have known that if my dad hadn't have told me. And of course, I was always interested in airplanes since I was a kid. And it was like, no, tell me more. And I couldn't get anything out of him. And then by the time I got to be an adult and I had been in the service and everything, he moved away, he moved to Phoenix. And I don't think we saw them again, So it's always fascinated me, the pilots of that era. And then I had another relative who was flew A-20s, and, I have a little bit more information from him, but same thing. He just would not talk about it, but he did leave me all of his photographs and things like that. So I do have those and treasure them.
But, absolutely. Yeah. It's a familiar story. I hear, I talk to people all over the country and I hear the same thing over and over again, whether it's, they're talking about their father, their grandfather, their uncle, a cousin, they didn't talk about it. They hardly know anything about their World War II experience. So it's very sad.
It is very sad. And we're fortunate enough to, like you said, we go to the different air shows and things like that, and we're able to see these warriors that they, that private foundations and museums have kept and restored. And you get to actually see them fly, and you realize the power of them and the size. And I always like to think, like, you look at the B-17 and see when they first started designing it in the mid-30s, and that's only 12 years from when they were flying biplanes out of World War II. And the technology that went into the B-17 is just amazing. I just can't imagine the pilots, any of the crew members on there, you know, doing that. And I always think of the flight engineers, you know, who had to know everything on that plane.
Yep.
It's just an amazing story, an amazing time in our history.
Absolutely. You know, these B-17 with a 10-man crew, typically the gunners were in their, you know, 18, 20, 19 years old, and the flight crew, the bombardier navigator, the pilots were in their early 20s, although my dad was an old guy. He was 28 years old.
Yeah, so he probably called him Grandpa.
Yeah, absolutely. of his crew, there were three that were married, but my dad was the only crew member that had a child. I think that's one of the reasons why they named his plane after my sister, the Susan Ruth.
Oh, sure, sure. Wow. Was that
flying combat was brutal and extremely dangerous. 26,000 men were killed in the 8th Air Force, which was more than the entire Marine Corps fighting in the Pacific. And another 28,000 men became prisoners of war after their planes were knocked out of the sky by either enemy fighters or anti-aircraft fire.
You think of the one bombing mission, I think it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, I might be mixed up, but it was a 1,000 plane raid into the Ruhr Valley, and they lost, I think, almost 50% of the aircraft.
Well, there were some brutal missions. Actually, the biggest mission was on December 24th of 1943, when 2,000 bombers hit targets around Berlin. So when there were, you know, B-17s and B-24s dropping bombs on, you know, around Berlin, there were still bombers taken off from England. I mean, that's hard to imagine.
Yeah, and if you multiply that number by 10, that's the number of men that were in the air in combat.
Yeah.
That is just phenomenal that to think of it.
The worst time, though, was in 1943, before these bomber formations had adequate U.S. fighter support to take them all the way deep into Germany and back again. 1943, although they had a mission limit of 25 before you could go home, it was statistically impossible to complete 25 missions. In 1943, the average number of missions flown before being shot down was only 6. And then they culminated in the fall in October of 43 over Black Week, when on 4 missions, 148 bombers were shot down, 1,500 men.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just amazing. I remember the statistics from, you know, when their fighter protection could only take them as far as the coast, and then they were on their own.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't until right at the end of 43, beginning of 44, when external fuel tanks were added to the P-47 Thunderbolt and the introduction of the P-51 Mustang, when they finally, bomber formations had adequate escort all the way deep into Germany to the target and all the way back.
Yeah. You know, a funny thing about that is, you know, I study up on these aircraft and the missions they've gone on and that, and you always see them, these squadrons dropping their external fuel tanks. And I was actually talking to a World War II vet. I don't know. Do you know Vince Branza? He was in the 101st Airborne at Bastogne.
Yes. He comes out to Planes of Fame.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to him, and we were having lunch, and he asked me about the same thing I had thought about before. He says, shouldn't those things be all over Europe? You know, how many of those did they drop? It wasn't until I checked on it and figured out the British had made them out of paper mache. And they coated it with a type of a lacquer that would last for about 3 hours before the fuel would eat through them. So they would have to drop them anyhow. And so they just disintegrated. And I'm going like, well, I never thought of that, because I thought, geez, you'd think people would be walking through a field. No, here's a couple tanks, you know. I just couldn't imagine what happened to them.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, boy, I love it. Are you going to go out to the Plains of Fame Saturday?
No, because I'm in Arizona.
Oh, you're at Sedona right now.
So I know they have that mosquito that's visiting out there.
Yes, I know. And
did you hear that the Palm Springs Air Museum now has a movie Memphis Belle station there?
Yes, I do that. I saw that too, and it's in flying condition, and they're looking at coming up with a schedule when they're going to be flying it to different places, and that's going to be something to see.
Yeah, that'd be great if that happens, because it was touring, and then they took it out for a few years, so we'll see. But they have now they have two B-17s
right
at Palm Springs, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. I went out and saw the other Memphis Belle at the Air Force Museum, the real one.
Right.
And, of course, they have the other one there that they've had forever. I can't remember its name. But anyhow, it's a D model or an F model.
They had the shoo-shoo-shoo baby there.
That's it. Yeah, the shoo-shoo baby. Yeah, it's still there.
They gave that to the Smithsonian.
Did they move that?
Yeah. They're going to, do some work on it, not the flying condition, but they're going to do some refurbishing on it and then put it back on display at the, the Aerospace Museum
there
outside of D.C. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. But that the Memphis Belle, the work and job they did on that to get it back into looking just like it did when it came off the showroom floor is
phenomenal. Yeah, it is. It is. That's really interesting, because I was there to see, actually, it was within a couple months to see, I went and saw both of them. And I thought, this is really cool. They got two different versions of the B-17 here. Yeah. No idea that they're going to move it out to the Smithsonian, but that's cool too.
Yeah, that's the deal that they made with the Smithsonian.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a lot of swapping that goes around, I've found over the years, because I used to see that mosquito at the EAA all the time.
Right.
And in fact, the year that you and I were both there, they were flying it.
Yeah, and all wooden plane.
I know, it's an amazing plane. It's just amazing. I think between you and I, we got the best jobs in the world.
Oh, yeah, I love what I do.
I do too.
It's so much fun. The main reason I do what I do, though, is to keep the memory of those guys alive.
Oh, absolutely.
So people don't forget the sacrifices they made to preserve freedom.
Yeah, and it's a challenge to write a story about real events and real people. I don't know if everybody realized what's involved. The last book I did was a Civil War book about my great-great-grandfather, but I know so little about him, I had to make it mostly about the unit and just assume some of the things that they had done because of the lack of communications. But I wanted to express how the life of a soldier really doesn't change. They go the same gripes, the same complaints. And it took, with that, it took me 10 years of research between to the different battlefields, going to the Library of Congress, doing things like that, because that was really a strange time, because they walked everywhere. And so I really appreciate what you did. Totally appreciate it.
Well, again, I was so blessed to have so much information, at my fingertips, firsthand information. Really, the only thing that I did was just add a great deal of historical information and anecdotes about the World War II surrounding the air war over Europe, the 8th Air Force, to put everything in context and give it the background. But all the information that from the Belgium underground, from the Hans Berger, the Luftwaffe pilot, my dad, other members of the crew. I mean, it was so detailed that these letters, not only from my dad, but other members of the crew, from family members of the crew, it just all came together. And there's lots of excerpts.
Why don't you tell the listeners and viewers how they can find out more about you, your book, where it can be purchased, if you have a website, you know, upcoming appearances you're going to have, anything like that that you want to spread out. Plus, we can put it out on our platform also so that people can come and see it on our show platform.
Well, my website is stevesnyderauthor.com. Snyder is S-N-Y-D-E-R. stevesnyderauthor.com. And my website is just not about my book. It has a great deal of information about World War II, the air war over Europe, links to veterans interviews, links to archival footage, all the shows of 12 o'clock high on the TV show. There is a lot of information.
Awesome.
If someone wants to buy a hardcover copy of my book autographed personally to them, there's a link there on my homepage. They can get that. Most people buy the book on Amazon. It's available in all formats. In the print book, there's over 200 time period photographs, so you can visualize everything you're reading about in the paperback or the hardcover. And then all types of ebooks, Kindle, as such, and then also as an audio book. My email address is on there, steve@stevesnyderauthor.com, if someone wants to contact me. My phone number's on there as well. And also on my website, there's a tab that says schedule, and that lists all my appearances and interviews I'm going to do throughout the year.
Oh, great. That's great. And
I've already started adding some stuff for 2022, but that's a process. I keep adding stuff throughout the year as I book different shows and things.
Oh, very good. Very good. Do you have a YouTube channel?
Yes, I do. And I have a ton of YouTube videos on there.
Awesome.
At air shows, videos I've done at air shows, presentations I've made to all sorts of different groups, my documentaries on there. So I got into that a few years ago. My youngest son, Clayton, kind of pushed me into it, which I was kind of hesitant of doing, but now I put stuff on there constantly.
Yeah, I know the feeling. What about Instagram? Are you on Instagram?
No, I really don't do Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I have a personal Facebook page, Steve Snyder, and then I have an author page, Steve Snyder Author Shot Down. So I post a lot on Facebook. I'm on Facebook quite a bit.
Yeah, I know.
Posting stuff.
Oh, my. Yeah. The other thing is, what about the documentary? Where can that be seen at?
You can go to my YouTube channel.
Okay.
Pick that up. It just Steve Snyder, Author Shot Down. Just Google that and it'll come up. It's on there. And some more recent ones, presentations I've done at the Mighty 8th Air Force Museum in Pooler, Georgia. Is on there. Lots of presentations, but there's a lot of great footage of at air shows of, you know, B-17s, B-29s, fighters, what have you. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy doing YouTubes.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I know I've got a list of ones that I want to do myself from the different air shows, and it's finding the time to do it.
Right.
Because, you know, as it is, we have things pop up all the time.
Yeah. Like we said, it's a part time or close to a full time job.
Well, as I usually tell, and as I worked my regular career so I could do the job that I wanted to do.
Good for you.
And that gives us the flexibility now that that we can do this. You know,
you had it planned out. I had no idea I was going to end up doing this.
Well, I didn't really have it planned out. I kind of gotten pointed in that direction. And it was one of these things like, what am I going to do? I'll never, you know, when you're younger and you're working, it's going, I'm going to do this forever. And then all of a sudden you get to that point and it's like, no, you're done. You got to go. I had some great mentors that pointed me in the right direction. And I fell back on stuff that I had done in college, you know, where they said that, you know, you should be in entertainment. You should be in the creative portion of entertainment development and things like that. And I always kind of went, yeah, okay. You know, and I never gave it any serious thought until a point came when, no, I really don't have a career anymore. And, which made it fun because you get to go out there and rebuild and remarket ourselves. And, I'm sure you feel the same way. You're blessed at all the wonderful people we've got to meet by doing this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, meet so many great people and I'm fortunate to meet a lot of veterans.
Yeah. Yeah. And friends with people that I never, ever thought I'd be friends with. That's and, right. You know, I thank God every day that I was been given this opportunity to do this job. And I'm sure you feel the same way.
Amen. Absolutely.
All right, Steve. Well, we're going to call it a day here at the IQ Podcast Studio at the Attorney King Studios here in Coronado, California, and the Real Tommy Unleashed Show today with our special guest, author Steve Schneider, and talking about his book, Shot Down. I'm going to put links on the page and that so you can check out what Steve's up to and how to get his book. So, Steve, thank you again so much for being on the air with me today.
Well, thank you, Tommy. It's been a pleasure. A lot of fun.
Yes, and we'll see you around the air show circuit, I'm sure.
You got it. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, brother.